Blog Talk Radio.
My intro, my doom and gloom intro, as I have my guests on the line. Hello, Tom?
Yes.
Hey, Tom, how are you? This is, I have Thomas Woods, New York Times bestselling author, and he actually just released another book, The Road to Recovery, and you're releasing another one coming up that I'm actually scheduling with your new publisher on. Tell us what you've been working on since the last time you've been on my show.
Well, last month I released a book called Rollback, and the gist of it is that like we all know, you got to cut the budget. Like everybody knows that. Like I mean, any 10-year-old with an internet connection knows that. But what I'm doing in Rollback is basically saying that if you're going to succeed in cutting the budget, which is absolutely unavoidable, you're going to have no choice but to do it. We got a complete fiscal collapse coming. The first thing you have to do is cut all the propaganda that gives you a budget like this. All this propaganda about how helpless we'd be if it weren't for all these programs and. Man, we'd be all a bunch of pathetic boobs if it weren't for Joe Biden and his careful custodianship of us all. Where would we be? And I mean, this is the sort of thing you are taught in school from junior high onward that there's no reason ever to be upset at or in opposition to the government because it's really just made up of wonderful, self-sacrificing public servants who just want to pursue the public good. And if we didn't have these people, well, the society wouldn't be worth living in. We wouldn't have any art or science. We'd have no education. We would all probably be dead from poison food, and our kids would all be getting their limbs blown off working in a mine for a dollar a day. I mean, I understand that everything I've just said is superficially plausible, and we all got that in sixth grade, but every bit of this is false, and it's this type of mentality that leads people to go along with these big government budgets because they think, well, this is just a wonderful institution that's trying to help me out. That's where we have to start cutting, not with the budget, but with the propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Now, we both know it's all about the children, right? It's all about the sympathy, the compassion. If you don't care about it, if you don't want to fund every single thing, if you don't believe in the war on poverty and the war on everything, that something wrong with you, not with the program. Now, we've seen these programs grow, explode. I'm not talking about just for Obama, of course. He put into hyperdrive. He's driving the Ferrari, whereas Bush was driving the Porsche 911. No pun intended, obviously, but the
right.
911 Turbo. This is an institutional issue, and people think that it's only the entitlements. Yeah, the entitlements are a large part of it, but if there weren't entitlements, they'd be spending on whatever the hell they want because they already found a way to get around the earmark ban. Tell us more about what do you think is the most pervasive problem with politics? Is it with the people not being watchdogs? Is it with the media? Is it with just politicians being politicians? Or what do you think it is?
Well, I mean, I think it's not a matter of, gosh, if only we had a more alert public. Of course, that would help. Certainly it would help if we had a less brain-dead population. I mean, here they are getting exploited to the hilt every single day, and all they can think to do is go to the mall and, watch the game and watch pornography and go to bed and repeat the thing the next day. Like, that's basically that. I mean, we have a huge number of people for whom that is the perfect description of their lives. So this is not helpful. But at the same time, it's the nature of the institution itself. I mean, you have an institution here, this highly centralized federal government that has a monopoly on the power to tax. Obviously the states can tax, but in other words, the state itself, the, the organized apparatus of compulsion and coercion, which is what government is. It has this monopoly, and it has a monopoly on initiating force. How could we possibly expect some piece of paper to limit this? If you give a group of people these types of powers, and then you say, okay, but make sure and limit yourselves. I mean, come on. Like, we have no right to be surprised. So, unfortunately, I think it's just the very nature of the beast that we're fighting, that it has no interest whatsoever in keeping itself limited, and it has every interest in propagandizing and brainwashing the population into thinking that freedom is slavery, and being looted and expropriated is, you know, like, you know, the best way to live and the only way to live. I'm kind of suggesting in Rollback that, no, you know what, there is another more humane way to live. How about if we, instead of going along with this system in which the government pits us all against each other, where the farmers are grabbing from the till and the industrialists are grabbing from the till and the various big businesses are grabbing and the education bureaucrats and the scientists and everybody wants to grab some portion of the loot. What if we had this radical thought that maybe we shouldn't loot each other at all? Like, we should just treat each other with respect, and if we want something, we ask for it instead of just grabbing it. I mean, we'd be a lot better off if we thought this way.
Now, for me, I think the biggest problem that more people should have started seeing it was kind of in their face is when condos just started exploding around Washington, D.C. area, and that was maybe the last 20 years or so. Lobbyists exploded. They were making millions of dollars. There's small firms. This guy, this Republican, is on trial for something. He's opens up a consulting firm, makes $1 million, goes to jail a couple years later for the same thing that he violated years ago. But he's making millions, prospering up the system that we're supposed to be living within. So tell us more about what you mentioned in your most recent book, which is the one that I recently released.
Yeah, okay. Well, no. Rollback is, I think it's the most blow-your-mind thing I've done, in that I am trying to pack as much information in one small space as I can to equip people, first of all, help people understand what's going on better, but secondly, to equip them with the arguments they need when you get cornered by people who say, oh, my gosh, though, don't you... If we listened to you, people would be dying in the streets, and you get all these arguments about how indispensable the thing is, and my gosh, I mean, if we didn't have the federal government and its stimulus programs, you know, where would we be? Or, gosh, without the Federal Reserve, we'd all be dead, and we'd be using seashells for currency, and, you know, whatever. I mean, we'd be falling down a deflationary spiral, black hole, whatever. And then on and on and on. Or gee, Sweden is an example of a country that spends a lot and seems to be doing well. So that's a great example of how we could live. And all these sorts of things. We'd be dead if it weren't for the regulatory apparatus. All these sorts of things that we're just – or you know what? The guy we need to turn things around is Newt Gingrich. I mean, you know, all this sort of stuff. But basically what I'm doing is it's like an onion. You know, so an onion's got a bunch of layers. First layer of my onion here in this book is Obama has been a bad president. Okay, well, this is, again, you know, a 12-year-old kid with an internet connection can see that Obama's been a bad president. Like, this is not a lot of heavy lifting going on. But that's a chapter where, you know, you get a lot of the typical Tea Party people, anti-Obama, they pick it up and say, yeah, this guy's right, the healthcare thing's terrible, and here's what's wrong with it, here's what would have been better, here's what's wrong with the stimulus spending, all the arguments that you need. But then I start peeling away another layer. Like, well, let's talk about the financial crisis. Here's some more propaganda the government gives us, that occurred because of deregulation, we're told. Well, I am taking that on. I am so sick and tired of hearing about this. I'm taking that on head on, giving all the arguments, going through exactly what deregulation was, showing that it had absolutely zero to do with the financial crisis, and going through exactly what did cause it. Then the next layer is each chapter gets bolder. The next layer is the Federal Reserve. Well, gee, you'd have to be some kind of crank to be opposed to the Federal Reserve. Look at all the wonderful stability it's given us. You don't want to go back in time, do you? Okay, well, all of that, all those claims are dismantled using all the most recent scholarship on the subject. Then we get to the military-industrial complex. I mean, I know when I was younger, when I was a more sort of traditional middle-of-the-road GOP guy, if somebody had said to me, we got to look at the military budget, I would have said, what are you, some kind of commie? We can't do that. But I show that, in fact, that if you really do support the free market and you do support at least limited government, that you have to take a look at the shenanigans going on here. This is the one department that is not subject to audit. Why? Is that because they're all angels and they would never do anything deceitful? You know, give me a break. And then finally, the second to last chapter is the myth of good government. And this is where I go through all the hard cases. Like, again, as I mentioned earlier, gee, wouldn't we be entirely without science? If it weren't, surely you don't want to cut government science funding. What kind of Neanderthal are you? And then just on and on down. What about poverty programs? My heavens, where would we be without those? And just on and on and on through all the hardest ones. And then finally at the end, what can we do about it? And I go through and give some suggestions, and they're a little bit outside the box, but I would say that the chances that the solution to our problems are going to be found inside the box are pretty low.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of talk about, first off, I think the Republican Party is failing once again right in front of our eyes after being given a gift in the past election. A lot of people think it was anti-incumbent atmosphere and stuff like that. Listen, it wasn't that large of a percentage that flipped. A lot of people retired. All that kind of stuff happened.
Mm-hmm.
It was a part of an anti-establishment, but the Tea Party mobilized. That's what caused the election to turn out in the favor of the Republican Party. And those people that were elected by are showing the other face right now, a lot of them. And they just reportedly cut $6 billion in the last CR while they're spending billions more on top of that every single day. So $6 billion over 3 weeks, or over that same span we're spending, what, $100 billion? On top of it. So it really was no cut. It's really a loss, obviously.
Yeah.
And they funded Obamacare in the same bill. The other thing that's being floated around is a balanced budget amendment. I know people that are actually working on this, and it's something that a lot of people have talked about. John Hayes talked about, a lot of people. You don't seem to like this idea. Why do you feel that way?
Well, I think it's a typical, you know, DC kind of distraction. You know, it's the sort of thing that that the typical, you know, right-of-center, mailing list, empire guy makes a lot of money pushing on the conservative masses. But in practice, okay, you have the practical obstacle that I think it would take a long time to get the thing through, and we don't frankly have that much time. But the key problems are, number one, every single balanced budget amendment that is likely to have any chance of passing, every single one of them has an escape hatch in it. Every single one. Well, and the one that the Republicans tried to introduce the last time we had a great revolution that swept through the government and made big changes, it was in 1994, we got this balanced budget amendment that said, now, look, if 60% of the Congress thinks it's an emergency and we just have to have an unbalanced budget, then it becomes okay. Well, I mean, come on. I mean, how stupid do they think we are? And then on top of that, I mean, the federal government, in case people haven't noticed, plays budget games constantly. So if it's under the pressure of a balanced budget amendment, then it simply takes things off budget and says, aha, we've balanced the budget. In other words, the very sort of things that it blames the private sector for doing, you can bet your bottom dollar it would do immediately. So it's much more important to just say, look, if you want a balanced budget, nobody's stopping you. Go ahead and do it now. I mean, this is why, as I say, it's much more important to go after the propaganda and the mentality that's leading people down this road of, oh, my gosh, I've been told from birth that if it weren't for Joe Biden and if it weren't for Bob Dole and all these people, Walter Mondale and Jimmy Carter and Richard Nixon, if it weren't for these great father figures, I would be lost. I would be a lost, wandering soul. No, 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 no. Have some dignity. Quit believing this stuff.
Well, I like that you mentioned Richard Nixon, because a lot of people don't seem to understand. They think he was this kind of bulldog guy that kind of just made one wrong. This guy, like a lot of other Republicans, and I'm talking about pre-FDR days, of course, Herbert Hoover, really destroyed the Republican Party. We're talking about a lot of Republicans that really destroyed the party. I'm not going to mention more names, but Richard Nixon, the EPA, and various other organizations that he created that are still around today, and really paved the way for more government creation, such as the DOE, Department of Education in Jimmy Carter days.
Yeah.
But you obviously hate children and you hate the elderly. Obviously, you want to take everything away from them. Tell us what your proposals are. A couple of them. I don't want to give everything away because people obviously won't read the book. But just the I encourage people to. But tell us a couple of the proposals that you have that you think that would that might either get passed or would have the best effect today, not tomorrow.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me urge people to check out. I've actually got a free chapter of the book that you can just read. You don't have to pay anything for it. At my publisher put it up at rollbackbook.com. I'm practically begging you to read this because you will not feel like you wasted your time. Rollbackbook.com. Read this thing. Now, the in terms of what do I recommend? Well, as I say, most of my recommendations are you know not of the sort of policy wonk type. Just because I'm not. I think that's the way governments get larger is gradually. You know, they adopt another program and then another one, then another one. I'm not so sure that it works that well in reverse, that the way we get out of this is by gradually eliminating these programs. I'm not sure that I think that goes against the grain of how government works. But nevertheless, I'm a good sport, and I'm going to give it a shot. So I have a couple of policy wonkish kind of recommendations, and one of them is, and when you hear it, you realize it is not unreasonable. There's nothing crazy about it. And yet, at the same time, you know that instantly you know it's completely off the table right now. It won't be 5 or 10 years from now. I guarantee you that. It will not be. But it's just a simple one, which is when you turn age 65, you ought to be given the following choice, that you can either elect to receive the benefits that you're entitled to at that age, or alternatively, you could forswear those benefits and in exchange be entirely freed from estate, income, and gift taxes for the rest of your life. Now, and that would immediately take a tremendous pressure off the system. Now, I would take that in a second. I would take that in a second. Now, notice the person would still be paying payroll taxes. And these are people who probably wouldn't have been working otherwise. So this would actually be new revenue through the payroll system. But I would gladly do this because, I mean, I'm terrible at golf. I'm not going to spend my life doing that. I want to work till I
you
drop
and me
dead.
Both.
Pardon me?
I said you and me both. I almost said
yeah, exactly.
I don't need to come after me. Golf is not my game.
Exactly. So I give up, so to heck with it. So I could easily see doing that. Now, it's interesting, by the way, I've heard kind of this could just be a rumor, but I've heard from various sources anyway that one thing that Ron Paul is kind of mulling, as perhaps if he were to run for president as a campaign theme, is very interesting, is he's proposing a system in which he would say basically to the young people, look, you know what I know, you're getting screwed, right? I mean, only the most brain dead among you know, fail to realize that you're getting screwed. I mean, obviously the burden of maintaining this impossible system and all the government's impossible promises is going to fall on your shoulders. And you guys right now can barely even find a job. 85% of college seniors say they're moving in with their parents when they graduate because they don't know what else to do. And these are the poor souls who are going to have to, hold up this whole crumbling system, which is going to crumble anyway, even after all the sacrifices they make and all the sweat that all the work they're going to have to do to survive all the taxes they're inevitably going to have to pay. So he's basically, again, as I've sort of heard through rumor, suggesting the following proposal, saying, okay, how about this? What if people talk about opting out, like I want to opt out of Obamacare, I want to opt out of this porno scanner at the TSA, but Ron Paul's saying, how about opting out of the whole damn thing? What if I said, you will be taxed 10%, no more than that, 10%, and in return, you get nothing. You don't get any federal programs. You don't get any of this stuff. All you have to do, but what you do get is a mere 10% tax burden, and that's all we'll ask of you. You're not going to get anything, but you'll get the lowest taxes that anyone on the planet is going to see, and that's it. Now, would you take that? I mean, there are throngs of kids who would take that, which is precisely why there is nothing the establishment wants less than to hear an outside-the-box proposal like that gain traction.
Well, for me, the way I see it, and I'm a single guy, I'm making pretty decent money for my age, and what I see is that the government does not want me to succeed. I'll tell you why. A lot of people challenge me on that. They tell me why I'm at my age when I should be starting up and building a life and having a family and doing everything for the common good of the country in the spirit of the collective, and having the values that are needed for a successful society, why am I being taxed at my bonus over 40% that I worked hard for, and my regular salary with federal, state, income, city, and whatever, I'm in New York City, I'm being taxed almost 40% right off the bat there, and it's after I put money in 401k, which hopefully will be there, but I know the Social Security money probably will not be, so I'm talking about another 10% basically just throwing into the wind. So I'm taxed up the wazoo, and I'm not using any of the services. Now, how many people are actually utilizing the services that are offered to the government? I'm not talking about the entitlements. I'm talking about the other stuff, which encompasses, on a state level, encompasses more of the burden, because obviously federalism has become a big hot topic issue. A lot of states are opting for a type of nullification. I know Idaho was, and a couple others, and that was what your other book was about. What is the potential for something like this to actually succeed, at least on a state level, where people have more saying, you know, well, I can go to the park, that's part of my taxes, that's part of my 10%, but I can't go to the hospital and go to the ER and expect to get care for it unless I have cash in my pocket, something like that.
Well, to the extent that you could do this at the state level, I mean, most of the taxes we're paying are federal, so the key thing is really going to the federal level. But what I think you're going to start seeing is, I'm not optimistic that we're going to have a serious, robust economic recovery. I'm not optimistic about that. It's not because I'm a pessimist by nature, just because I'm dealing in reality. I don't think it's going to happen. So what I think is going to happen is that you're going to get states more and more that are just in big, big financial trouble, and a lot of the ones in financial trouble are the ones with the highest tax rates, as it turns out. And those are also states where people are going to be fleeing, because people are going to be so desperate, they're going to just try to find the best environment they can live in. And so as a way of attracting people or stopping them from leaving in the first place, I think you'll start to see states making offers or in effect thinking to themselves, look, there's no way we in this one state can turn the economy around, but we can at least make our state the most job-friendly, business-friendly state there is, so as to attract more people, attract a larger tax base. I think they're going to have no choice but to try things like this. It's precisely when you're in a desperate situation that a proposal like this that would be considered radical in normal conditions, you know, comes to be considered at least conceivable. And I think in 15 years we're going to be in a very, very different situation in this country, very different. We will have almost certainly gone through a pretty substantial fiscal crisis. And when you go through a crisis like that, things that would be considered unthinkable suddenly are on the table. So I think it's entirely realistic, the kind of thing that I'm suggesting now.
Yeah, sometimes things have to collapse for something to actually happen. Sometimes a bully needs to get punched in the face and get a bloody nose to realize that, hey, I'm a bully and I need to stop it. Right now I think the government, state, local, federal especially, are very giant bullies, and they need to be, someone needs to stand up to them. And if you could just give a couple more minutes to talk about this, because this is really interesting stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, with Thomas Woods, author of the new book, Rollback. It's available through Regenerate Publishing, regenerate.com, on my website. It's available through your website, tomwoods.com, correct?
Yes, tomwoods.com, yep.
And it's also available, obviously, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Any store that actually cares about what they're selling has this book.
That's a good man. Thank you.
Go check it out. my pleasure. Now, the thing about this is, I love the idea of federalism, because I think this is what really separates us. This is the road that Europe started going down. And any road that Europe starts going down, I think we need to go opposite of. They obviously went through the European Union. But it's not for federalism and the idea of individual states and individual sovereignty. We would have been long gone. We wouldn't even been thinking about socialism right now as being so bad and destructive, which I think we're living in a state capitalism, state socialist world anyway in America the way it is, because of all the regulations. But we would be talking about full-fledged communism because of how destructive a more federalist and centralized system is. Mob rule obviously takes effect in democracy and all the pitfalls of that. Tell us, what state do you think would lead the charge in either a nullification type of deal? Because I know a lot of states are getting waivers on Obamacare. I don't know if that'll go through all 50 states or not. Probably not the Republican states. But do you think it's like South Carolina that really kind of sparked the Civil War? Do you think it's America? Do you think it's Texas and don't mess with us attitude? Do you think maybe it could be a dark horse like in New York says, hey, leave us alone. You keep destroying our Wall Street. Wall Street provides for about 50%, 60% of our budget, whatever the number is. Leave us alone.
I'd love to think there'd be a dark horse like New York. I just don't think that's how the dynamic is going to work. But I think it's
something you say yes.
Well, I mean, it's hard to. It's yeah, I know. But I mean, really, their strategy is just to kiss up to the federal government one way or another, not to really rock the boat.
Right.
So I think, I mean, you know, the Idaho example is very instructive. I mean, the governor of Idaho has not only read my book Nullification, and I had a nice breakfast with him a few months ago, but you know, he's gone on national television and just come right out and used the word nullification, and he's totally unfazed by the fact that the left wing, you know, media monitors and smear artists are going after him, and you know, they're all ignoramuses. They don't know anything about the subject of nullification other than what they read, and you know, they read like one third of a Wikipedia article, and they think they're experts on the subject. He's totally unfazed. Pardon me?
I said all on the Huffington Post.
Well, needless to say, but he was totally unfazed. The House, the state House there, voted 49-20 for a nullification bill after having hearings on nullification that were attended by hundreds of people. I mean, that is not anything to shake a stick at. And there are a bunch of other states where this is popping up, and there are other issues too. I mean, in Kentucky, we've got a gubernatorial candidate, Phil Moffitt, a Tea Party candidate, who's calling for pushing back against the EPA and the FDA and some of their overreaching when it comes to local farmers. Also hemp, the production of hemp. I mean, there's nothing wrong with hemp. It yields you a great many important products. Founding fathers were rather fond of it. So there are hemp nullification initiatives. So these could be really any state. There's a state in the union, I'd love to tell you what it is, but I don't want to jinx it. I was invited to come speak to the legislative leadership of this state, and I will be doing so in about 2 weeks, to talk about nullification and the historical and constitutional arguments for it. And this whole thing got started because 44 organizations in the state, and this includes, these are not tiny organizations, 44 major organizations, including huge tea parties and 9/12 groups and Campaign for Liberty groups and libertarians and whatever, 44 organizations co-signed a letter to that state legislative leadership saying, we urge you to meet with Tom Woods to talk about nullification as a remedy. I mean, this is, even though none of the mainstream TV or radio people other than Judge Napolitano will even mention the word, it's getting out there anyway. All these major groups, they know all about it, even though the people who are supposed to be their great support to the media are blacking this whole thing out. They're hearing about it. They're supporting it. They're pushing for it. So this is a semi-major state, I mean, and good size. So I think we're going to be surprised. We have to just wait and see because it's picking up all over the place. There are several states where there have been initiatives where people have purchased copies of my nullification book and distributed it to all the state legislators in their state, every single one. That was done in Nebraska and Utah and a few other places that I don't even know about. The governor of South Carolina was given a copy in a big ceremony. We got pictures of it, of him holding it. You know, it's really, really taking off without any media support whatsoever. So it's all quite interesting. And you can get a lot about this. I put a lot of resources on this. You can read for free. I mean, of course, I would be thrilled if you bought Nullification. You'll find it's a blow-your-mind book, but at tomwoods.com, I put up resources, you know, like answering the objections, because, you know, I can understand people having objections. I've got all these sorts of resources up there at tomwoods.com, and people are somehow finding this stuff, even though they're not being directed to it by, you know, Sean Hannity.
Now, you are obviously a very dangerous man with all these all this brainwashing that you're doing and telling people that they can live without the government. Obviously very dangerous, and The whenever liberal media attacks anybody, I say go with it. You know, there's a reason we love to argue with stuff. We love to see the opposing view in many cases. I encourage people, even the left, just take a look at it. The last book we spoke about was Nullification. You were just alluding to it again. This book is Rollback. All of this is something, it's at least food for thought. Think about it. You don't have to follow. You don't have to be libertarian. You don't have to be conservative or a devout liberal or anything like that. Well, at least pick it up. You can check it out. Again, you can pick it up on tomwoods.com as well and read his other stuff. There's there's so much left to be talked about. I will speak with your publicist again. I definitely want to have you on again because there's so much that's going on, and hopefully you can give us the recap of what's going on in this mysterious state that you mentioned. I think I know what it is. I'm not going to ruin it.
I appreciate that. I mean, mainly it's because I don't want the left to try to derail it. Unfortunately, I have too many jerks gunning for me, so I have to be circumspect.
Of course. But we also heard of the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats. You are the man who interviews zombies. People could also check that out. I think it's tremendous content. They could also check that out on your site. I believe it's still up on there.
Yeah. Even if you don't go to TomWoods.com, you don't go to RollbackBook.com, I'm going to give you one more URL, which I shouldn't do. You should just give one. But I'm telling you, check out interviewwithazombie.com. This is how you deal with a hostile media. This is how you laugh at them and you turn the tables on them. Check out interviewwithazombie.com. This is like the best thing I ever did because it suddenly people realize now the types of games that the media is playing. So check out interviewwithazombie.com. And again, thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. I would just like a rebuttal on that. The best thing you ever did was come on this show, let's be honest.
Oh, okay. The second best thing was interviewwithazombie.com.
God bless you. Thank you for all your efforts. Please keep us posted. I will have you on the show again. Let us know everything that's going on.
Okay.
And best of luck. And
thanks a lot.
Once again, roll back.
Appreciate it. Have a good night.
You as well. God bless.